Hi, I'm Josh.
And I'm Lindsay.
And this is the Hideaway Podcast, episode 69.
Yesu Nabo. That's Korean. What's today? Saturday.
Saturday, February 20-something. 23rd.
Gosh, I'm so like confused about the day. We left because the city of New York is beautiful as it is, wonderful to live here. It's also a pain in the ass. And they turned off our water for our building all week because they were doing water maintenance on our street. So from 7 to 6 p.m. every day, we didn't have water. So Josh and I decided to go up to New Hampshire, which was great. But then the building had to fix something in our bathroom, and they accidentally turned on the bathtub a little bit.
But while the water for the whole building was turned off.
So they didn't notice they turned it on, and we got a call the next day that our bathroom had flooded, and the poor apartment below us, they got just so much water damage. So, our smart plan of getting out of the city ended up being not so great, but it was still nice to be in New Hampshire.
Yeah, I enjoyed the relaxing time in New Hampshire. Got some time to reflect on two of the shows that we saw last week. Lindsay and I both had separate Saturday night plans.
We did.
I went to BAM and saw a show called Non Solace by a company called...
He can't remember the name.
I can't remember the name. I got to pull up my phone. Recircle Company. They're Budapest Hungarian.
Yeah, from Budapest.
You're from Budapest. It's described as a sublime duet, exemplifying. What are you singing?
I was underscoring. Yeah, that Miles from Budapest. Oh, Mike.
Yeah, is it George Ezra? Is that the singer of that song? In any case, the show at BAM was actually pretty interesting. The show itself was just two people. One was a dancer, a classically trained dancer, who then learned circus, and one was a circus artist who then learned dance. And they each did three solos and two duets with one another. And the show itself was nothing particularly exciting other than how incredibly skilled these two acrobats were. Truly two of the most outstanding, multi-skilled, aerialist dancer acrobats I've ever seen. No doubt they could hold a show, just the two of them, doing six or seven acts over 90 minutes. Definitely recommend it if you're into dance and circus and you're not looking for story and you're, as I described to somebody, it didn't really make me feel anything. I think it was meant to make me think a little bit. Don't really know what I was supposed to think about. But typical BAM.
What do you think of this trend of like contemporary circus just being in a sports bra and like tight shorts and it's either black or nude and that's it?
Well, I think the purpose of it is to take focus away from obviously the costume and more onto the performer's body and their physique. And in some ways it helps because if you see a show like Gravity and the Myths or Circa or one of these Australian companies that do this a lot, you really are able to focus on, I don't know, the musculature and what they're doing. I think it can be a bit of a boring choice. I mean, the guys in the show were wearing nude colored spandex shorts. So they basically look naked the whole time, which I think was part of the idea. But I don't have anything against it other than that it's not a lot to write home about.
Right. I guess it's really taking away. I mean, it's an easy choice.
It is an easier choice. It's one less thing you got to worry about. Mm-hmm. Probably less you have to pay for unless you have to clean. You know, one pair of spandex shorts is a little easier than, like, I don't know, a full-scale Las Vegas showgirl right. costume or something.
Right. I know. I guess part of the theatricality to me when I watch a show is the costume and lighting.
Yeah.
And that's part of the show.
The show had amazing lighting. I'll give that. I'll give it that. Okay. Had very good lighting. And they really used all, what do you call it? Lighting fixtures that don't move. They're all like preset, like cans. And they had some really cool stuff they did with it. They had a cool big plastic sheet that shone lights through. So the opening scene,
they shined
lights through this plastic sheet onto stage. So when you were watching this opening scene, everything sort of looked blurry as this like acrobat fell from the heavens onto the ground. It was very, actually not dissimilar from the opening of Varica, if you've seen that Soleil show where Icarus is falling from the sun.
What was the show we saw last year about immigrants and...
The Circus Secor show. I think it's called Limits.
And there was someone falling through the water.
It's a, I mean, the idea of slowly lowering an aerialist to the ground while they're, like, falling on their back is a often used theatrical device.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of over the, like, spandex, just nothing.
Yeah.
I liked it when I first saw it because I'm like, wow, you can really see these people's bodies, which they're incredible, you know, all the muscles and everything. But I kind of like, you know, everything, pendulum swinging.
Yeah.
We got like so stripped back to where it's like, well, you don't want anything. And now I think I want
some more costumes.
Some more elements, you know? And not even like a lot, but just something. I don't know.
I get it. I mean, even if they're basic costumes, they can add to the narrative storyline of it.
Yes, the narrative storyline.
For example, in Beyond Babel, we sort of have 2 to 3 sets of costumes for each character. And sometimes the characters are all in grays in order to indicate that everybody's kind of... I won't say what it's to indicate, but sometimes they're all in grays. Sometimes they're in colors. Sometimes they're in completely different things that are used for dream sequences, and all those things have references to what point in the storyline they're in. But again, these shows like Non-Solace and Gravity and Other Myths don't have, they're circus shows without storylines.
Right, so just really the technical aspect. It's not like
the
costume is
serving the story in any kind of way.
It's true. And I guess for those shows, it would be super weird to be like, why is that guy in like a full costume?
Well, I think everything is probably serving the acrobatic technique.
Yes.
Including the costume.
That's true. But...
Well, what sort of juicy while I was seeing?
So I like saw the other end of the spectrum, I think. I saw a show called Di Cappella, which is... So if anyone doesn't know, I'm like a massive Disney fan. I love Disney World, Disneyland. I love the Disney movies, except I have this weird thing about animated films. I don't like love them. I have to be really convinced to see one. And I loved Frozen. I loved what was that animated film that was in the head take place in
Inside Out.
Inside Out. That was really good. But so my friend was like, you know, this basically Disney created a acapella group, their own acapella group. It's like not even a year old. Bless you. Bless you.
Thank you. Tried to hold it in for the microphone.
If anyone's watching Frankie and Grace, it's such a good show on Netflix. It's with Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin, but Jane Fonda, like her character's name is Grace, and she always yells at Frankie because she holds in her sneezes, and she's like, "That's so dangerous. It's so bad for you." So
I've never heard that before.
I don't know if it's true, but it says on the show. I love the show. Anyway, back to Di Cappella. So Disney created their own a cappella group, and it's about a year old, if that. And it's, I think, 7 or 8 people. I think it's 7. And they have their own show.
A perfectly balanced mix of men and women, all races and genders and sexualities.
Pretty much, yes. Yeah. It was more men than women because there was a beatboxer who was a man, a bass, a tenor, and like another tenor, and then an alto, a mezzo, and a soprano. So really ran the gamut. But they could do a lot of amazing harmonies, and they were definitely really good. They did a lot of mashups of songs. Obviously, it was all Disney, and it was very Disney-fied, like very choreographed, very perfect with the lights. The lighting package was great. One thing they did, or there were 2 standout moments, I think. One was they did a mashup of Let It Go and then Do You Want to Build a Snowman, which was really good. When we YouTubed it for Josh, Josh
and I. Do you want to let go of your snowman?
No, it wasn't. It's like, let it go. Do you want to build a snow? It was really like the 2 songs going at once.
Okay.
Which was, they were just good at singing. But the best part of the show, I think, was that, so do you know, okay, trivia. Do you know what the first song that Walt Disney wrote was?
Walt Disney, the animator, wrote a song?
Yes. Like, it was the first song in one of his pieces of work.
Was it for Steamboat Willie?
No.
Then I don't know.
It was Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Wolf?
Oh.
It was the first song, yes. And it was like it was one of the first movies that they did.
Huh.
So, fun fact. But they did that song. And they had, like, the film playing, the silent film playing, and they were doing the voiceovers, basically. And Foley, they explained to the audience what Foley was. And, but they modernized it because the guy who's, like, this tenor, he was really funny. He was like, and I'm going to be the shade. So he like took his sunglasses out and was shading the whole story the whole time.
Okay.
Like, why is he like running in there? You know, like I can't do shade, but yeah. You know, like, you're like, yeah, it's shady. But he was shading it the whole time. And that was funny.
So would you recommend DiCapella to our listeners?
No. 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 But they did. They were like, this is our number one hit off our album. And it was like a mix up of Hero 8 or Big Hero 8, Big 8, or Big Hero. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't recommend it, but it was fine. It was cute.
Well, that's our roundup of shows we've seen in the last week since our podcast. We actually have a really good guest today. I'm excited for you guys to hear our interview with Lara Jacobs. I met Lara working on a show called Empire. That was a Spiegel World show. They had a tent in Times Square, and then they took the show on tour in Canada and Australia. And Lara is the daughter of this man, Madir, who created a bunch of different acts, including a famous stick balancing act, which some of you probably have seen in Amaluna, the Cirque du Soleil show. Others have no idea what I'm talking about. But basically, she takes 10 branches and slowly sort of builds this. She balances them all one on top of the other and then balances it on her head. And it's a really intense, intense act. But I got to know Lara better when I traveled to Switzerland and met more of her family and watched them basically create a brand new show. A part of what's so special about her and her dad and their company is just how creative they are. All of the acts they do are completely invented and new circus acts. That's sort of their MO is, you know, not just doing regular old fabric and trapeze. Everything is a unique, specialized act. And we talk about some of those in the episode. You know, Lara's also got a great combination of life in New York and life mm-hmm. on the road, mm-hmm. dance background, circus background, growing up in the circus. And, you know, she was pretty straightforward and had some good candor and was funny. So I think people are really going to enjoy it.
I know I enjoyed it. I think Lara has a quality that I really admire in people that's very just confident and straightforward and like knows what she knows and what she thinks and isn't apologetic for any of it. And I really love talking to people like that. I think it's so interesting because you can have a real conversation and an open and honest conversation too about just what you think and what you are inspired by or not inspired by. You know, like I really enjoyed talking to her. So I think this is going to be a fun episode for people to listen to.
And for those of you in New York, she's actually working on a brand new sort of immersive show experience that's going to be in Midtown Manhattan called Moonrise. She teases it a little bit near the end of the episode. I think it sounds super cool. So make sure to listen out for that if you're a New Yorker yeah. and you're looking for the next hot thing to see.
She also, we talk about her, the stick balancing act, but she and her dad sell a miniature set of these at Cirque du Soleil and just you know, wherever they're performing. And I was like, Josh, text her to make sure she brings one because I want to try it. And she did bring one. And we can attest that it is really hard. We haven't been able to balance more than one stick.
That's not true. I've gotten it where I'm holding the third one. So there's two sort of balanced out of 13.
Okay. So you got to three.
I don't
two?
Know.
If, no,
I
it's
think
like
it counts
two.
As two because there's two balancing yeah. and I'm holding the third one.
Right. And I got to one. And this is a miniature version. So it really made me understand how hard it was. Yeah, I was like, oh, this is really hard. So enjoy the episode. And if you like our podcast, as always, please like us on iTunes, rate us on iTunes. Okay, I just, you know.
Rate us on the iTunes.
Rate us on the iTunes. Try this again. If you like our podcast, follow us on Facebook. Like us on iTunes. Rate us on iTunes. Follow us on Instagram.
Twitter tweet us.
Email us at hello@hideawaycircus.com. And, you know, just thank you for listening. Here is our episode with Lara Jacobs.
Yeah, the New Year's Eve on
yeah,
2000.
New Year's Eve in 2000 was like the scariest thing ever. Right? And I was like with my family. I was like, okay, well, if we all die, we're all together. I was like, why 2K? Yeah. All the computers.
I was here at Times Square.
You were in Times Square?
I was in Times Square in 2000. Nothing happened. I was like,
It was such a build up, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh God, this is going to go bad. Yeah. And then nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
Y2K.
Y2K. Alrighty. Well, I think Laura will ask you the question we ask a lot of people to start with, which is, where are you from originally?
Switzerland.
Where Switzerland. In Switzerland?
I'm from a small town called Wattwil, which is in the east of Switzerland, so 1 hour from Zurich.
And what languages did you speak growing up?
Swiss German.
Swiss German, and are your parents Swiss as well?
Yes.
And I know this, but did you grow up in a performing family?
Yes, I did.
Can you expand on that? What kind of performing?
So, my parents went to circus school in Paris together when they were like 20, 21, I don't know, young. There they founded Rigolo, a street theater. And then a few years later took it back to Switzerland when I was born. And, you know, we're touring in the streets of Switzerland pretty much. So I grew up kind of in a caravan, not really. But, I mean, my bed was in a drawer of a caravan when I was first born.
Really?
Yeah.
You probably slept so well, though, because I always slept so well as a baby, yeah. I guess, in a car.
Yeah.
So you're probably a great baby.
I don't remember that.
Did they put you on stage as a young child?
Yeah, I started performing when I was 4 or 5, like somewhere around there. I did a trapeze act. We had this stage that was made out of a truck, and so the sides would open off the truck and they would become a stage. And it was like 2 levels, and the trapeze was hanging from a big bird on top of the 2 levels. So it's kind of high up, you know, for that age.
For a four-year-old?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But so don't four-year-olds have really good grip strength? Like, kids have really good...
Yeah. Babies, I don't know.
A four-year-old? 4 or 5.
Old. Yeah. Yeah, or maybe I was 5. I don't know. Something like that, though. But it was a good time. Yeah.
Did you like doing it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you realize that your life was a little bit unconventional, or was it all just normal?
Not yet. Not until I started school.
When did you go to regular, like, typical public school in Switzerland?
In the winter months, and then the rest of it, I was just touring with my parents.
Is that, like, okay with the school Swiss authorities just to leave half the day?
It was okay because my parents both have a teacher's degree. So they were allowed to teach me, but luckily enough, I was on the smart side. So when I started school, I filled out all the books within like 2 or 3 weeks for the whole year. So I did the whole curriculum in a few weeks, and they were like, yeah, she doesn't need to go. So it's fine.
What did your friends think when they found out that you were, like, you know, a performer and, you know, you're a, I don't know, 8 or 9 or 10, and meeting regular people, probably.
My close friends, they were excited about it. They loved to come to my house. We used to play dress up. Like, that was the first thing that everybody had to do. They had to, you know, change their clothing when they came to my house, because I thought everybody was dressing so boring. So I corrupted everyone and put costumes on them. So my close friends, I think they were, you know, excited, and, you know, they loved what I did and what my family did. But then, of course, there were others who did not understand, you know, conservative Switzerland doesn't really, you know, not everybody will understand people growing up in a velo tent, touring with yurts. I mean, I kind of grew up on a site like Burning Man. Like, when I went to Burning Man, actually, I thought, like, yeah, that's kind of how I grew up, you know? So not everybody was cool with that. And I would get weird questions sometimes. Sometimes people are like, but do you know which ones are your parents? Like, they would think that we all just have a huge layout of beds in our house. And, you know, everybody sleeps with everyone. But that wasn't the case, you know? Yes, it was a bit, you know, unconventional and not the same as a regular Swiss household. But it wasn't, you know, not to that extent, you know.
Did you become, like, rebellious as a teenager, or were you into still?
Yes.
You were rebellious.
Yes.
In what way?
I wanted to be normal. It's not dressed normal like the other kids, you know. I didn't really want to perform. I became a little bit of a gangster, you know. I set like things gangster? On fire oh in my school. God, in Switzerland? I stole stuff. Yeah.
What kind of things did you set on fire?
Like a garbage can.
Oh, rebel.
Yeah, like the, you know, the big garbage bins outside of the school. We used to buy like fireworks and throw them inside so they'll explode. Oh my god. Or I would like set the school kitchen on the water, and then the fire department had to come pump out, and just luckily they never knew it was me, you know. I always got away with it.
Oh, you did? I was gonna say, did the school like
nope. I got away with it.
Well, so you were a smart gangster.
I was. Yeah.
And you left Switzerland as a teenager, right? When you were 16?
Yeah.
Where did you go and why?
Well, I wanted to go to Elvin Ailey, for one, and then I did want to go to New York as well.
And Elvin Ailey, for those who don't know, it's a dance company that was started in the 60s or 70s, and has a beautiful big facility up in Midtown where you can train and be part of the company.
When did you get interested in becoming a dancer?
I think soon after. I mean, I was doing the trapeze thing, and then I also did tight wire and unicycle. But then my family also kind of switched a little bit, going more into dance theater. Mm-hmm. And I was also training as a gymnast, and I wasn't very good. You know, I was not a good gymnast. I was way too artsy. I always wanted to bring my art in it, and I was scared of flying in the air and, you know, doing somersaults, and wasn't my thing. So they suggested actually I should do ballet, and then I went to ballet when I was like 6. So that's when I started to dance.
But it seems like ballet is so structured in a way that would be like the opposite of what you were doing.
Yeah, but I mean, when you're 6, I think the ballet classes aren't that strict yet.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, later it was suggested to me that I do modern and contemporary and jazz and hip hop. And I started that maybe in like 4th grade, 5th grade. And then I started to do it every day, like every day of the week I went to some kind of class.
And how did you find Elvin Ailey, and what, like, did you know that that's the company you wanted to be a part of, or
yes,
just like that was the one? Yeah.
I actually don't remember how I found out, honestly. It seems like forever. It seems so long ago, and why did I mean, I went to a dance school also in Switzerland, that was Jennifer Muller based. Jennifer Muller also is from New York and has a company here. And that school was Jennifer Muller based. And I think one of the teachers of that school told me that they have, that Ailey has a summer program. And I should check it out.
They do.
So that's the first time I went with 16. I went to that summer program.
Did you go by yourself?
Yes.
What was that like?
Your parents just were like, bye.
16.
Yeah. I packed my things and I left. There wasn't really anything they could have said. And they knew that, so they didn't say anything. So they supported me. But they always supported me if I wanted to do something that has to do with art. You know, if I would have just been like, yeah, I'm just going to go to New York and I don't know what I'm going to do.
Work on Wall Street.
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, just without the plan, you know. Yeah. Then they wouldn't, you know, it would have been a different story. But since I did have a very clear vision of what I wanted to do, and I was saying since I was a little girl, I wanted to be on Broadway and, you know, become all these famous things. They were like, they weren't like trying to stand in my way, you know.
Right.
So they supported me.
Where did you live when you were here?
Oh, my God. You don't want to know. I was living, my first place was in East Williamsburg, the Montrose stop, which was then like in what, 98. It was crazy, you know. It was not like it's now at all.
And you were 16?
Yeah.
Did you just find the place yourself? And
I don't even, it was crazy. Like it was me and a friend of mine also from Switzerland. She was maybe like 2 years older than I, and she was doing an internship as a banker, but we were both broke. We both didn't have money, didn't really speak English much, no social number, nothing. And so when I came here, I hopped in a cab, and then the cab driver, he knew of an apartment that his cousin was renting out, whatever, you know, something like that.
Oh my God. Nowadays, you're like, this is so sketchy. I'm not going to so follow sketchy. The taxi driver.
Yes, but we did. And then, you know, the apartment was such in a bad shape that the living room actually fell down, like the ceiling. So we could see, like, into the space upstairs, and there were rats. They were just, you know, New York City rats, like the size of
massive
dogs. Yeah. And the sink in the bathroom fell down, and it was dripping from upstairs. So we had to walk around with an umbrella sometimes. Like, literally, it was a disaster.
Oh my God. How long did you live there?
Maybe like 2 years.
Oh my God.
Enough time.
That's a long time. I lasted a day, like, we're moving.
But I guess it's good because it encourages you to get out of the apartment and go train, because the apartment's not so fun to stay in.
Yes. And also, there was another thing. We only had one key, and after midnight, the door downstairs locked. So my girl, she had the key, so I had to actually jump, like do like a Tarzan jump onto the fire steps and pull myself up, like, you know,
circus skills coming in handy.
Yeah,
trapeze.
And I had to do that every night because I always like came home late. And across the street there was this biker crew. It was like a bike shop, and there was like a Puerto Rican biker crew. And, you know, they were just, like, waiting for me to come home and do these stunts, like, with my party dresses, you know? So we actually became friends, and they would, like, drive me to school in the morning with their motorcycles. So sometimes I'd arrive with, like, this Puerto Rican biker crew.
To Albanelli,
yeah.
The coolest dancer in town.
Oh, man, that was so crazy.
Did you fit into the...
Like, scene?
This Albanelli scene, or were you always like...
No, I didn't. I didn't really fit in anywhere, I think. But I didn't really care, and people didn't really care either. No. I think it was... For me, it was relaxing in a way to come to New York, because you could be whoever you want, and people don't really care. No. So that was, in a way, like a breather for me. Because in Switzerland, I never felt like I fit in. For sure.
I know that feeling. So how many years did you train at Albanelli for?
I would say like 3 years.
And after the training was complete, was your space, your brain space like, I want to be a dancer now, or I want to create my own show? Like, where were you after your training was finished?
Yeah, well, the thing was I got pregnant and I had my son. So I needed to take a break.
And how old were you? Yeah,
I was 19.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
So not planning on it.
No. But I got married. And yeah, I mean, then I went back to Switzerland for a little bit. I did a production with my father. And then after that, I went back to New York and I opened my dance studio at the Times Square Art Center. Mm-hmm. And that was fun for a while until I decided to, you know, get into the dervish dance and create the fire dress.
The dervish dance is like the dervish whirling, spinning style. Maybe so, before we go too much further ahead, you could describe sort of the general style and aesthetic of your dad's work and also a little bit now your work.
Okay. So my dad specializes in creating acts that are never seen before. They're completely unique. My mother will help him with that as well. They have these visions. I don't know where they get them from. I'm starting to have some too, but I still feel like I'm a little, you know, I'm learning and I'm, you know, I'm trying. But my father is absolutely insane when it comes to creating stuff. He's like a genius. And so he just creates these apparatuses and has these visions of new things. And
I would say one of the most impressive parts about the style is how it's not really confined to one kind of discipline. No. So, for example, in the show Empire, which is where I met you and your dad, there was an act where there's like a big piece of like a tree or wood, and then there's a spinning top, and the top moves up and down like the bark of the tree, basically, while he's balancing it. There's other acts like where there's a character who basically has a suit on with tons of different like pipes, and it's kind of like the Bellagio fountains, but done like through his fingers head and elbows. That. So they really, and then, you know, there's aerial acts where it's sort of like a version of Cradle kind of modified with like moving wings and different kinds of things. So it's really every kind of genre. It's not really, I think the thing that ties it all together is it feels very handmade and human operated. Mm-hmm. But so back to the whirling dervish element. So were you like, I want to create an act? Is that where that has dance and has that sort of similar aesthetic?
Well, we were working with Sia Azazi, who is a famous dervish dancer, and he's also a choreographer, and he was the dance choreographer in our show. So he did some dervish training with us, and I hated it. I hated it. I got so nauseous. And he was like, well, you're actually, like, that means that you're very stubborn and that you're not very open-minded. And I was like, what, me? How can that be? He was like, no, you're holding on with your life. You know, that's why you get so nauseous. And it was eye-opening to me, you know. And I encourage people to try it because it can really change your life, actually.
So can you explain it to me?
Mm-hmm. So you start, you know, by learning to accept a different situation, because once you start spinning, things don't look the same anymore. You know, you don't have the lines. You see lines everywhere, right?
Yeah.
So once you start spinning, you're only going to see the horizontal lines. Mm-hmm. You're not going to see the vertical lines anymore, which your body isn't used to. Your brain thinks, oh, something's wrong. I need to, you reject it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, poisoned.
I'm not. Yeah. I'm not understanding why things look different, why things feel different. And if you're not like approaching this with an open mind, your body is gonna want to reject it. Mm-hmm. So you're not really open to new things, you know.
Right.
In a sort of way.
Yeah.
So I had to literally learn. Tell myself, oh, it's okay if things are different now. Like, I don't need to reject it, and I can live with things being different. And once this clicks, you're not going to get nauseous anymore. But it has to click, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
And you just, like, is there a specific skill to just turning super quickly, like with your feet, or is it just moving them?
You can do however you want. Some people say that there is a specific technique, but my teacher would say you should do how you're comfortable, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. How it's good for
you. And then you amp up the danger by lighting your outfit on fire.
That came way later, though. I went to Istanbul, you know, to take workshops, and that was another crazy story.
I've seen people with Turkish videos of people doing the whirling dervish with like LED dresses, mm-hmm. and where like the dress sort of opens up in the middle and it sort of looks like like a top, or hard to describe without seeing it. Yeah. Google, you know, Turkish whirling dervishes.
Kind of like a mushroom.
Kind of like a mushroom, mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, kind of like we did at the Cosmopolitan.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For Rose Revelle.
Yeah, exactly.
And when did the stick balancing act become such a focus of your, at least, performing career? Because it has been recently.
Yeah, I mean, that was later, though. I think I need to go back once more to the dervish thing, because that's when my dad and I started to tour together. Mm. So he was doing the balance act and I was doing that fire act, and we got booked together. So we did like Roncalli, we did like different assignments together with these two acts.
Will you explain the fire act, though, for people?
So it's like basically the dervish tanura, so the dervish, the dress, and then I have an igniting system on me, which I have to screw together before the act, and then I have to put the gasoline on the dress beforehand. And then while I'm spinning, I'm pressing the igniting system, and then it's like a small explosion that lights the dress on fire. And then I have to keep spinning until the fire goes out.
You can look at this video of Laura doing it on her Instagram, which is at Swiss Laura. So if you're listening along, you're not driving.
Is that the right one?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
At Swiss Laura.
Yeah, it's a pretty, Swiss pretty LA. Cool
video. I think I follow like three accounts of yours.
Yeah.
Yeah, I follow that one, like Balance Goddess.
I have like five, yeah, because I do so many different things and I don't want to put too many things because I don't want to confuse people. So I try to like have different pages for different things, you know what I mean? Excuse me. Yeah.
Hold on. Sorry.
Sorry. So you're touring with your dad.
I was touring with my dad.
How long do you have to spin till it goes out?
Not so long. But when once you're on fire, you know, a minute seems long.
Yeah.
You know?
I bet.
It's very hot and you have to be very careful. It's very dangerous. And I actually don't encourage anyone to try it. Don't do it.
I wouldn't ever do.
Don't do it.
It freaks me out even watching it. Watching it on the unicycle somehow makes it less worried. Because I don't know why. But when it's just turning.
Yeah, no, don't try it.
I get nervous anything with fire.
Yeah.
We were at a show in Brooklyn, and a girl had fire hula hoops.
Mm-hmm.
And she, like, went to, she did, like, a hula hoop around her wrist, and it flew off into the audience.
Oh.
And then she styled, like, when she was done, and she, like, was holding them, like, next to, like, on the curtain.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh my god. Like, so they were fireproof, but it was just like...
But this was the new House of Yes, and I feel like you told me at one point you did a show at, like, an older version of House of Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah. She was, like, on the curtain. She's like, yeah, luckily we fireproofed them. But she was out of control, and I was like, how do you do a fire act? And you...
Out of control.
Out of control.
No, yeah. Actually, my best friend just had a really bad accident.
Oh no, what happened?
Yeah. She had a show here at Sony Music Hall.
Uh-huh.
And she tried to relight her fire fans, and while pouring the gasoline there was still a spark somewhere. So she basically blew up like her whole costume, everything, her hair got caught on fire.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Is she okay?
No. So she's been in intensive care for 2 months. And so she just got home now. She had 5 surgeries to replace.
Skin grafts.
Yeah. And actually we're trying to do a fundraiser now at Taj.
How can people help if they want to?
So her Instagram is Sammy Dance. Mm-hmm. So there's like we put a fundraiser up together, and then we also have a GoFundMe page that we're trying to support because she's not gonna be able to work for like at least a year.
My gosh.
So yeah, I mean it's very sad, but she's in a good place and she's healing, and you know, we're trying to support her. But that's another reason why I'm like don't try fire. Don't try my fire dress if you don't know what you're doing, you know, like, please be careful, you know. Yeah.
Well, don't try the fire dress also because it's your design, so it's copyright infringement. So we're going to sue you if we see anyone try the fire dress.
Yeah.
Luckily, I've taken law classes.
Oh, that's always a good thing.
Yes. And between me and Josh has a lot of skills I don't have, and one of the skills I have is...
Law classes. I need to call you.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Any contract you need me to read?
Really?
Okay. I'm so good at that.
I will negotiate it though.
Josh negotiate because I'm such a bad negotiator. I'm like, sure. You want that? Sure.
Sure. Okay.
But I can. I love reading contracts, and I'm very detail oriented. So it's great. I'll tell Josh what to say, and then he says it in a way
that's amazing.
Too nervous. I'm just like, give in. You know, that's something as a woman I feel like I can get better at, is just like knowing the worth of something and not being like, oh, he said this, like, okay, fine, I'll just take that, and not being like, no, like I am worth this much, you know, especially like negotiating
Yeah.
pay is always uncomfortable for me.
For me too.
You can just have Josh do it.
Okay. All right.
Great. We are your new agents.
Amazing. Lara's fee's gone up by about 300%.
Wow.
Starting as a starting point.
Starting now.
So you and your dad then get along really well.
That's what I was going to ask. I was like, is it tough working with your dad or do you enjoy it? Because obviously like parent-child relationship is a... You know, we have a lot of couples who are performers, and we've talked a lot about what is it like to perform with your husband or wife or girlfriend or boyfriend. Yeah. But what is it like to perform with your dad?
To perform with him is a very different story than creating with him.
In what sense?
Because when we perform together for another company, we're just they're robots, you know? We're artists, do what everybody else says. We're both in the same pot, you know? Yeah. If we're creating... Well, especially let's say if he creates a show and I help, I have nothing to say and I kind of like have to do what he says. No, I mean, it's great, but it'll be a little more difficult, I would say, at some times, you know, because we could not have the same opinion about something. But lately, you know, we're getting along really well because... I feel like we don't have the same talent. So it's not like...
competitive.
No.
Yeah.
No, because I'm more the one that drags stuff into the world, you know? So I'm the one who like presents it to others. And then he's the one who creates stuff in a workshop. I have this great idea. And then I'm like, Dad, look, I had this idea. And then he goes in the workshop and actually executes the idea. So we complement each other a lot, I feel. Like, it's not so much a competition.
Is there anything that you particularly like making yourself? Like, I've seen you do, like, obviously costumes and on your Instagram, these chandeliers, but...
I want one of those chandeliers.
You want one?
Yes.
They're beautiful, gosh.
They're
right?
So gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's like, Josh, did you see this, like, chandelier that you made? And, oh, my gosh.
I know.
And I want one of your headdresses.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where I'd wear it.
It's in the apartment.
No, when you become a goddess at our new project, wear it there.
We'll get there.
There's too many things at once, right? Yeah.
I do want to talk a little bit about the stick balancing act, because most people, I think, recently think that when they think of you.
Yeah.
And this act is for sure one of the most unique and riveting, like, attention. There's so much attention the audience is paying to it. Basically, the premise for those who haven't seen it is that Lara or her dad, they both do it, walk out on stage. And there's a series of what looks like sort of large sticks on the ground. And slowly they pick up one and then another. And they start precariously balancing one small stick on a bigger stick, on a bigger stick, on a bigger stick. And to the point where, first of all, it looks like they're holding like hundreds of pounds of worth of wood with like one hand and then on their head. But it all ends with, and you got to Google this by looking at Lara's Instagram, with, I don't know, 10, 12 sticks all balanced precariously on one another. And then on another stick that's sort of on the ground, and Lara removes the smallest stick and you see the whole thing, collapse, and how it just, this little one piece is keeping the whole thing, balanced.
I remember being super nervous when I watched it. Yeah. Like, the first time I saw it was definitely like, well, because I just thought Josh was so cute. So I was like, I'll go see any show with you. Like, just like me. And so, yeah. But he should have smartened up more quickly, but he did eventually, obviously. But we went to see Amaluna. And that is literally all I remember from that show. But I remember being so nervous because, like, oh my God, what if she drops all these sticks? But yeah. I don't think I saw you.
But at Amaluna, it is hard because the AC isn't all the way off.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tell people, because that was the one thing I remember Josh saying. He was like, they need to turn the AC all the way off.
Yeah, we really need to have it off. But sometimes at Amaluna, because it gets so hot out, you know, we need to have it by law. We need to have it on just a little bit because of the people on the mast, they would get too hot, you know? That's the reason why we can't do it with the feather at Amaluna.
Oh, you do it with feathers?
Normally, yes. It's a feather. So which adds a lot to the act, I feel. which is very beautiful. But at Amaluna, unfortunately, we can't because of that reason.
Well, I remember watching, I think your dad practiced it in a Spiegel tent, and they had the air on. And the minute the air's on, the whole thing just turns and falls apart.
Yeah. And especially with the feather. With the feathery, there is a zero wind policy. Like,
it's not where working. Does the feather goes on the very end?
Yeah, you start with the feathers, like the first link. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I want to watch the act again now, like knowing more about it.
Yes.
Because I remember just being so nervous. I was like the most nervous I was in that show.
So I have a question though about that, artistic question about the act. Is the breathing necessary, like the intense, because you're mic'd often, I think, or at least I've seen it. Is that part of the theatricality to get the audience to sort of build the energy, or is the slow breathing part of like keeping still and you know, your hands not shaky or any of that kind of thing?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, of course I could do it without, you know, I mean, I'm an actress, you know, I'm trying to, you know, transport people into a different world. So I'm, you know, doing certain things to be able to do that. And breathing is one of it for sure. And it's also a big help for me to quiet the audience. So sometimes people ask me, what's the hardest part about your act? It's like to get a complete silence. Like try to get 3,000 kids on a Sunday matinee show to be silenced for 10 minutes. It's not that easy. But the breathing actually helps a lot because people literally start to breathe with you.
I was going to say, it's like it's a thing they talk about in like acting school and theater school, is the audience will match your
breathing. And they will stop talking and doing whatever they're doing. So it helps so much for me to get the audience to be silent.
Do you like, what is the, I can't remember the pace of the breathing.
It's like slow and steady, basically.
No, it's not. It's not.
It feels like it is.
Josh is explaining your
I breathe with my movements.
Oh.
Yeah. So like I pick something. Like I breathe exactly with my movements.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So that's also exaggerated by the movement.
Yes.
The breath. Mm-hmm. That's probably also why the audience is so riveted by it, right? Because it's a sound with a movement.
Uh-huh. And then, you know, because we have big audiences, the people in the back might not see every detail. But they will hear if I like stop breathing and or like if I do like a small breath, then they know that something's wrong. Mm-hmm. So it keeps them, you know, with me even though they're far away.
Do you know how in like, let's say, Wheel of Death, they do like a fake trip with the jump rope?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever have a moment in the act where you can basically like
scare the audience
like, you know, like, oh my God, it's gonna fall? Or is it very...
Yeah, with the breathing, I can do that, but not so much with the sticks itself because I can't really fake a drop or anything because then, I mean, it will drop.
And I was like, ooh, that act did not go well.
I mean, what I can do is like, I can, you know, I don't think I'm faking too much because there's always something happening. You know, if I'm in a new environment, there's always some door that's opening, gives me a little draft or, you know, there's always something that... Like, difficulties are usually real, I would say, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, if people, like, get up and walk around during your act, does that, like, you know, because when people walk by, you can sometimes feel the movement of air.
Yeah, anything, anything really disturbs.
Have you ever dropped the whole...
Yes, I have.
What do you do when that happens?
I start over.
And that's, and you just
do you go
doing...
faster the second time, or do you make it, like, a 20-minute act?
I mean, I think I listen to what is needed, you know? It depends on where I am, what show, who's the audience. If it's full of kids, I might just stop, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to, you know, because the act is not really for small kids. And, you know, they'd rather watch the Ariel or the clowns or whatever. So if it's like a Sunday matinee and I drop, like, when I'm almost at the end, I'm not going to start over, you know? Yeah. So it depends a bit. If it's just... Like, let's say it's at a show where I'm just doing one show and, you know, they put a lot of investment for me to get there. And, you know, then I will, of course, start again.
Right. Sometimes as an audience member, it's almost more like exciting to see someone miss it and then root for them to get it.
Yeah.
She's like, come on.
Yeah, it actually happened to me at the premiere at the Royal Albert Hall. Because so smart me was thinking that, oh, no, we're not in the big tub, so there's no airflow. So I'm going to do it with the feather. But the Royal Albert Hall is like, there's so much air. Just because there are like 25 doors and you know, it's a very old building.
Right.
So there was so much draft. So it actually fell at the premiere at the Royal Albert Hall in London.
And did you just start again?
I started again, but they brought me the wood stick.
With no feather. Did you like make a thing of like throw the feather? I was like...
No. I cannot just throw it. It's very, it's a very special feather. It's not just any feather. So yeah, I placed it, you know.
Gently.
It's like a mark.
I gave it to the queen to Prospera, and then she like hand me the wood one. And,
oh, that's nice.
Yes.
Was that like Marie Kondo? It's like, thank you for sparking joy feather. I'm moving on.
I tried,
from you.
But I mean, it's not working at all.
I have to move on from you.
And you've really toured all over the world with this act.
Yeah.
Have you seen any differences in the audiences? Yes. In what way?
The audience is like day and night. Like depending on where you go, for sure.
So like, where is a really good audience and where is a really bad audience in the world?
People are gonna kill me for that. I mean in South America the audience is amazing, I would say.
Yeah Our friend Mark Indick, who was a clown in Amaluna for a short while, said that about South America as well.
No, I mean, they're amazing and they're so genuine too, you know, like they will sit in the audience and look at you with like these wide eyes and then cheer like so loud when they have to, you know. But yeah, so for sure South America I would say is a great audience. Germany too. And then it depends, in other cities it depends also on the acts, I think. So because mine is very different, so for me, I feel like I get a bigger reaction in places where people have seen a lot already. And they're already, you know, used to a lot of circus stuff. And then I am more something new for their eyes. And then there I would have a bigger reaction. And then vice versa, where we go to maybe like a smaller town where, you know, everything is new for them, then other people might have a bigger reaction because, you know, it's more, you know, daring what they are doing in the air, more dangerous. So, you know, it kind of depends a little bit where we are, I would say as well. So for me also, it was very good in Paris, which is surprising, you know.
Yeah.
You wouldn't maybe
Paris and
think.
Germany both have like cultures of circus and variety.
Yes.
They see a lot of it.
But you can also, you know, it could also go the other way, you know. They could also be like, yeah, well, we already seen that, you know, 20 times. Or we've seen someone do it better than you. So I wasn't really sure if that was going to happen. But it was, I literally like sometimes had to wait for them to stop clapping before I could finish my act. Like in Paris, it was that crazy.
Did your arm get tired? Wait, you hold it with one arm, yeah? And then you use
bound. Switch arms, yeah.
You switch arms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you use your legs to pick up the sticks.
Yes,
I do.
Oh,
that's right. Yes. Man, I gotta rewatch the act.
And you use your head.
And my head.
So where was like the worst audience like experience for you?
I would say Canada.
Yeah, those damn Canadians.
I'm sorry.
We won't drop any specific Canadians in it, but oh, Canada.
French? Canadian? No, just kidding. Maybe not. Maybe I'm right.
I think my issue was there because there was like free alcohol in the VIP. And then after, you know, maybe that was just because of that and it has nothing to do with that being in Canada, but that was the case, you know. There was free alcohol in VIP, so you know, when people get intoxicated they don't like to be quiet.
No.
So, and that is very bad for me, for my act. It's very hard to do my act when people are throwing things and they're drunk and, you know.
We were talking about the, like, the added level or layer of alcohol.
Yeah.
Like, some shows, it really enhances the show.
Yeah.
And you can feel, like, when you do the show and it's, like, a Sunday matinee, yeah, and it really should be a night.
Yeah.
Saturday night show. And then some shows, you're like, this it doesn't need alcohol with it.
Yeah.
And as a performer, I'm sure it's like
frustrating
when we have, there's a really serious scene in the dance show.
Mm-hmm.
And some people had come from dinner and were like rowdy.
Yeah.
And it totally threw off, you know, the lead. And I was like, that's part of being a performer and like continuing to go and not letting it, you know, get in your head and like affect your performance. But I know, I'm sure it's like so hard.
Yeah. And then maybe, oh, Italy. Italy was hard.
The Italians.
Yeah.
They're loud people.
I think also that they like to present themselves as well a lot and are maybe a little bit less into, you know, watching other people being the center of attention.
Yeah.
I just think that didn't go so well for some of them. So they just felt like they needed to make a phone call or like, being loud, or their kids who like running around, or you know, and those things are very hard for my act. Yeah. So,
so you have been touring all over the world with this act, and you're in New York now again. Where do you want to be living when you're not on tour? Like, where's home for you?
New York.
New York, of course.
Yes.
And now you're back and you're working. Can you talk about the project you're working on at all?
Yes, I can.
Tease it?
Mm-hmm.
So, what is it?
So it's something that I've been working on for about a year and a half now. And it's actually a theater, a dance theater that my parents not invented, because it came from a book that Luisa Francia, she wrote that book called Moonrise. And it's about the lunar cycle of 13 goddesses, similar to the zodiac signs, but it's on the lunar cycle. And so every full moon, there's a different sign, a different goddess. So my parents took this theme for a show and called it Moonrise. And I was in that show. And we toured with our willow tent. I don't know if you've seen our willow tent before.
I don't know.
No. So we have this willow tent that when you stick it in the ground, it starts growing. It's very special.
Cool.
Yeah, it looks kind of like a temple, a Burning Man a little bit.
Uh-huh. Cool.
So we toured with that and we were sleeping in yurts. It's kind of how I grew up for a few years. For a lot of years, actually. And then, you know, somehow, I don't know how I came back to that theme, but, you know, I was looking for something to do with an immersive kind of concept. So, you know, I thought of this Moonrise thing and you know, went home to Switzerland and started opening drawers, like old photos of the show, old pamphlets and brochures and posters, and, you know, talked to my parents because I was small. I was like 6-7 when that happened. So I don't remember everything anymore, but I do remember a big chunk. And I just wanted to kind of like turn it into my idea and just took the basics of what my parents did. And, you know, make it my own. And that's what I'm working on right now. And I am planning to open a venue here with a partner that I found here, a business partner. He will be responsible for the hospitality part of the immersive concept. And I will be responsible for the art part. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I can't say where yet. It's still secret, and it will be kind of a secret kind of thing as well. That the whole thing is a little bit like secretive. But yeah, I'm working on that a lot now, and it's almost there. So I'm like, fingers crossed, everything's gonna work out fine.
Oh, nice! And will it have circus acts in it? Will it? What should people expect when they get their ticket? Or should they just go in not knowing anything and have a surprise?
It will be around my act. It will be around the balance act, because also the balance act has 13 branches.
Mm. Oh, cool!
So each branch will represent one goddess.
Are you gonna paint it or anything?
The branches, no, I'm not gonna paint, but they were actually will be stuck to a painting of a goddess. So we'll have 13 oh, cool. goddess paintings around the venue.
See, I had like sort of the idea.
Sort of the idea. Yeah, no, the sticks, I want to keep them natural, because people a lot of times already think it's something fake, and they think it's something inside, like a magnet, or it's really just wood branches, right. And I want them to look like
wood
branches. Yeah. I don't want...
Well, they're also such a beautiful, like, wood, mm-hmm. you know? But that's cool if they're all, like, hung up with a painting.
Hung up with a painting, and then, you know, it'll be like a ritual, you know, to take them down.
Mm-hmm.
So... it's not like you have to sit down and watch the ritual, but it will be like, you know, kind of happening while you're maybe, you know, looking at something else, or like while you're having a drink, or while you're smoking a cigarette outside, mm-hmm. or, you know, it's just gradually things happening. Are happening, you know? So that's kind of the idea of the whole thing.
Nice. Well, follow Laura on the internet and you'll see when.
One of her five accounts.
One of my five accounts, or six, or however many.
Is there anything on your bucket list, like an act you really want to do at some point, or a place you really want to perform, something you haven't had the chance to do yet?
A place I want to perform. I would like to perform at like the Oscars or something.
Mm.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Something opening, like one year there was an opening like circusy.
Yeah.
It was when Iris was at the theater that they were doing the Oscars in. Yeah.
I remember.
And
that
we did the BAFTAs in London.
Oh.
Yeah.
You did?
Well, no, but our show did.
Oh.
So I was just there, but I didn't perform.
So bucket list.
Yes.
All right, I'll call my friends at the Academy.
Yes, please. No, I mean, you know, that would be something like that I would like to do for sure. And then, I mean, on a larger scale, just to have dreams, I guess. Of course, I would like to direct at one point the Broadway show.
Mm.
Yeah. But
I mean, a musical or a play or a dance
stuff,
theater?
You kind know, of... stuff that we do.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Something, you know, can be thrown together with different. Yeah, for sure. But
what's your favorite Broadway show that you've seen? Because this is my area, Broadway. I can talk about theater all the time.
I can't say which one is my favorite. I really can't.
Well, what
top two?
Top two or three? What makes the cut for something that Laura loves on Broadway?
That's such a mean question, because I have so many friends and. You know, oh, my favorite. I don't know. I have to think about.
Do you remember that. The first thing you saw on Broadway?
The first thing? Is it Lion King?
Oh yeah, you got to.
No.
Classic.
You probably like that too, because there's so much puppetry in it.
I saw Phantom of the Opera.
Great, classic.
Like classic 80s electric piano.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing. I didn't actually see, I knew all the music to Phantom.
Yeah.
Except I didn't actually see Phantom of the Opera until I was like 25.
Yeah.
26.
It's crying.
Here. And I was like embarrassed, but it was like, to me, a thing that I was like always embarrassed about. Like people are like, well, of course you've seen Phantom of the Opera. And I would be like, yeah.
Yeah.
But I had never, so I finally saw it, and I was
I've seen it three times.
Oh, I wish I just saw this, listened to the soundtrack. I didn't love it, but I think I had so built up, you know, and I knew all the songs, and I saw the movie and everything, and then I saw it, but I'm glad I saw it.
It's a really good show.
Like Phantom. Yeah. I like Andrew Lloyd Webber.
The music of the night, just can't help myself.
Didn't they perform, they did it in the Olympics.
Oh.
That lady, who he wrote the show for. Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote the show.
For the lead.
Yeah, for his girlfriend at the time.
What's her name?
She's the soprano.
I don't know. You guys keep talking about Google.
And then look up Olympics, because I'm pretty sure that she sang at the Olympics like an Andrew Lloyd Webber song. I was like, why is she here? Like, well, where did this come from for the Olympics?
Right.
But those were her first shows. Lion King.
Yeah. And I saw Porgy and Bess, but was that even on Broadway?
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
Porgy and Bess. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that one. And then, what else did I see?
Sarah Brightman.
Sarah Brightman. Ah. That's it. And then what's the Olympics?
The Olympics.
Yeah, look up Sarah Brightman and the Olympics.
Okay.
Didn't Diane Paulus direct Porgy and Bess on Broadway?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So she invited us to go see it.
I liked that.
Yeah.
Did you?
I liked it. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. She sang at the 2008 opening Olympics ceremony when it was in Beijing.
See? Nailed it. And didn't she sing like an Andrew Lloyd Webber song?
And she was married to Andrew Lloyd Webber from 1984 to 1990.
Yeah, okay. That's why he wrote the show for her.
And then after she left him,
she no longer needed shows. Yeah. She's like, actually, I got this now. Okay. So bye, Andrew.
Oh no,
I had this like friend in high school who is an amazing singer, and she like when we were younger, Andrew Lloyd Webber heard her sing, and then like wrote an album for her, and like did it in London and produced it. And then nothing ever came of it.
Oh.
I was like, wow, he's doing what he did to Sarah Brightman to, like, a 13-year-old girl. But she's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, one of those voices that you're just like, that's an insane Broadway voice.
Yeah.
I don't know what she did. Like, she was in the workshop of that David Bowie musical.
Mm-hmm.
Labyrinth?
Labyrinth?
Yeah.
They
made it into a musical. It was at Signature Theater.
Mm. Fun note about Labyrinth, David Bowie's hands were played by famous juggler Michael Motion in the movie.
Really?
Labyrinth.
Oh, why? He didn't like his hands?
Because he did contact juggling. No, the villain character played by David Bowie, he like contact juggles evilly, and it's Michael Motion like with his hands.
Oh, wow.
You know, doing it. Fun fact if you watch that movie again.
Is Alma Luna the only Cirque show you've been in?
Yeah.
They keep the stick balancing too.
Yeah.
That one show.
Yeah. I can't leave. I'm like, no, you're not to leave.
All right. I'm forever stuck with Alma Luna. Mm-hmm. Alma Luna is a moon thing too, right? Or no, Luna's the sun.
No.
Right? No, Luna's the moon, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Soul would be the sun.
Yes.
I want to look up what moon goddess I am.
Yes. I have to tell you, you have to give me your birthday and year.
Birthday and year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know it off the top of your head what they are?
I can guess. I mean, I wouldn't be exactly sure, right. But what is it?
October 11th, 1988.
Probably that's kind of like around Halloween, but not yet. So it's, you know, it's maybe Freya, but it could be the one before.
Gotta look
it up. Yeah, I'll look it up for you.
I know I'm the year of the dragon.
In the Chinese calendar.
In the Chinese calendar, and then I'm a Libra in the horoscope, like zodiac sign. That's why I'm so balanced.
Sure.
I'm a Libra. It's like the scales.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're coming to that point, Laura, where we ask you the same three final questions that we ask every guest.
Josh just decided we were at that point.
We were at that
point. But we're coming close to the hour mark.
Oh, okay.
So the first question is, has there been a piece of advice, really good or really bad, that somebody has given you and has stuck with you?
A really bad piece of advice.
Or a really good one.
Yes, a good one. Actually, the clown René Bassinet, do you know him?
Yeah.
When I first started to do the balance act, one of my first shows, I was in the show with him, and he was like, you know, just always look at your branches like you've never seen them before. Like, you know, just give them that look and look at them, see different details you haven't seen yesterday. And I thought that was very special, and because, you know, once you start performing a lot, you kind of like get in that routine. Mm-hmm. But to always have that, you know, special spark in your eyes, I felt like that was such a good piece of advice.
Yeah, I love that. That's a really good one. Yeah. For anybody who has a circus act, that's, you know,
yeah, applicable. Just find things on stage and look at them like you've never seen them before. Whatever it is, you know, I feel like that gives you such a different spark in your eyes, because a lot of times I do feel like people have a little bit of dead eyes. Mm-hmm. Like they're not having that
the little glimmer
first time spark anymore. You know, you tend to forget. So I felt that that was like a small thing that everybody can follow, you know. So thank you, René.
That's perfect. Second question. For somebody who's maybe a teenager and a student and listening and wants to be a performer one day, mm-hmm. is there a show or a movie or a book or something artistic that you love that you would recommend they see or read or experience?
To get inspired?
Yeah, to get inspired.
See, like I find that always a bit hard. Like people ask me, you know, what would you do to inspire people? I was like, as an artist, you don't need to be inspired. You know you're an artist or you don't. Because if you need inspiration to become an artist, you'll have a hard life, you know?
So maybe not necessarily for inspiration, but something to open like their minds.
Open their minds. Because I feel like, you know, like when you see shows, there's stuff that you're like, wow, that is sticking with me, or that is terrible, and I have an idea of how to make it better, or you know what I mean?
Or a book you love, or a movie you love.
If you like the stuff that we do in my family, I like Zingaro. You know Zingaro?
No, what's that?
Okay, you have to. They're from France. Very avant-garde. Very kind of a little bit like my family's company, but different. And it's very poetic. It's with horses as well.
Mm. How do you spell the name?
Zingaro. It's a C as in Sue. I N G A R O.
Okay.
Mm.
Yeah.
Cool.
I love horses.
Yes. And they have such beautiful visual pictures. And, you know, I really like, I think my entire family is like in love with their shows. So we're like a little bit like fans of them, you know, of their work. It's so beautiful and artistic and.
They're from France, you said?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I gotta check them out.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's fun to
check it out.
Someone new to look at. Last question, but I know who I feel like you should say. Who do you think we should have on the podcast?
Why do you know?
I want to have your dad on.
My dad? He doesn't speak English.
Oh, maybe you can translate. Or Josh's dad speaks
a little bit. Ah, yeah.
You know, his whole family.
Translators in. Other than your dad, who should we have on the podcast?
You should have my dad, though. It would be so cool to have him. Because he started, like, how old is he? 50 years ago. He started with this stuff.
Right, that's,
he's so many stories to tell, for sure.
And just to talk, I mean, I love hearing, you know, talking to people who come up with new ideas, like, you know, the fire dress and stuff like that, and the balancing of the sticks. It's just, I get inspired by listening to people who come up with new ideas. And, you know, it's like so cool. Like your mind is so cool.
Yeah.
The creative mind. But so who can speak English?
I need to think about it, because I would want to send you someone really interesting. And it has to be from circus?
Nope.
No.
Circus, dance, anything that's like live performance, music.
Music. Theater. Okay. So then I will recommend you Nesrin.
Okay.
She was, I met her through Amaluna. She was a singer for a while in Amaluna. And then she was working at the opera in Valencia. And then I encouraged her to go solo. I was like, quit your job, do it. You know, she was thinking about it, but she's a little scared. And then she did it. And now they're actually number one on jazz.
Oh my God.
Awesome.
Yes. So. I'm a huge fan of hers. I love her. I love her as a performer, as a singer, as a musician. She plays the cello.
Oh wow!
So I'm her biggest fan. So, and she speaks like 10 languages. So.
Oh great!
Perfect for us to speak one.
Yeah, I barely speak one. Laura, thank you so much for coming to the podcast. It's so nice talking to you.
And that was our interview with Laura Jacobs.
If you like our podcast, make sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, Twitter tweet us, email us at hello@hideawaycircus.com.
And don't forget, you only have one more month to see Beyond Babel in San Diego before we bring it on tour. Get those tickets at beyondbabelshow.com. And of course, Misbehave Game Show is playing every week in Las Vegas. You can learn more about that at misbehavegameshow.com.
Thanks, guys. Bye.